SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website too, stevebick.com. And back home after the fascinating and enjoyable experience in Las Vegas, to say the least. Whether it's, you know, the crowning of a champion, the ins and outs that come with just the game itself, just following the mutuals and the dollars and cents, and then the strategy and everything that goes with NHC. You just heard the, you know, the final portion on the replay from yesterday. And yeah, you know, I never know how many people, you know, tuned in over the 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but I'm gonna some of which has got to be repeated, including a lot of the weekend results. Talk about everything that went on, you know, on the racetrack in general, and a lot of which we discussed as it was happening, including the really impressive performance, and that being at Santa Anita and Venetian Harbor, hoping to catch up with Rich Baltus. But a lot to weave in over the next couple of days as we start to also look toward Fairgrounds and the Risen Star Day festival preview, how we're, all the different ways they merchandise the lead up toward Louisiana Derby, Fairgrounds Oaks, and so much more. As I said over the weekend when that card was drawn Saturday, and we had a chance to, I think on Sunday, to glance at the field as we were watching and keeping track of the future wager pool too. Two divisions of that Risen Star. So Saturday's going to be great, and the entire card at Fairgrounds. Looking forward to talking to Chad Schexnader and Marcus Hirsch in advance of the weekend. But a lot to absorb yet today. We're going to talk to Barbara Minchel. That situation at Tampa, and by all rights, you know, especially when you think about the players that hit Admiralty Pier at Tampa, and then, you know, Roger Satina, for instance, and plenty of the players that vaulted up the leaderboard on Saturday afternoon with the mandatory, the fact is Admiralty Pier could really be a two-time winner. So we'll talk to Barbara. She's up in Ocala, day one yesterday of the, she's in Ocala, but at Phasig, day one yesterday of the winter mix sale. So some people over at the sale as we end the mix sale season. We'll talk to Barbara. Who else? We've got Patrick Biancone. We'll catch up with Patrick about Sol Volante, also Ete Indienne, and Diamond Oops. Talk about all three. We didn't really dig in, you know, other than saying that Independence Hall and And so Vellante, you know, were well clear and, you know, felt like the two. Aja, we'd regroup, I suppose, but the top pair going forward. So we'll talk to Patrick, and I mentioned Richie Baltus. Johnny, of course, Johnny D. Actually, I talked to Johnny just before the show. We were talking about the weekend. We got to look at the future wager and the way things closed out. I know we went over a lot of the numbers, but then, you know, going into it, like midday, like it must have been about 3 o'clock, about 3 hours to go before the pool was going to close, but then we were so deep into the NHC by that point at 6 o'clock, we really didn't get a chance. What I actually did was reorganize the pool based on closing prices. And there's some very interesting elements of this. Actually, I'll probably bring this up with Johnny and certainly tomorrow when we talk to Jeremy Plonk. But it did seem like, based on the way the pools closed, the horses that have stayed in the barn that are preparing for their 3-year-old debuts, they actually fared pretty well. I mean, 'tis the law, obviously, as the top individual price, 8-1. But Dennis's Moment, I mean, Authentic, who's waiting his next opportunity, they were the 2, 4, and 5 individual prices. Dennis's Moment, 10-1. Authentic, 14-1. Maxfield, 14-1. Nadal was 11-1, and that was before the San Vicente had been run. 6 horses closed between 10-1 and 20-1. I should mention one thing that I, when I did this, one thing I noticed in particular, the line that we touched on that Mike Battaglia made, it was really accurate. It was really, really accurate. I you got to acknowledge that. Up and down, you know, the ones that were 30-1 for the most part, the, you know, the, when you get into the second half of the field, you know, the horses that either drifted up or, you know, were already going to be a high price. You know, there's a couple of disparities, but for the most part, very impressed. Structure was 30-1, closed at 25-1. Enforceable 30-1, closed at 27-1. And No D'Or 30-1, closed at 29-1. That's pretty good. Honor AP 30-1, closed at 31. Storm the Court 30-1, closed at 31. Governor Morris 30-1, closed at 30-1. 31-1. Yeah, it was very, very nice job. And the same thing with those horses in the teens. Dennis's Moment was, and Nadal were 12-1 each. They closed at 10 and 11 respectively. Authentic, 15-1, closed at 14-1. Maxfield, 15, 14. Thousand Words, 15, 16. Independence Hall floated up, which is logical, having, you know, been beaten. But I will say 17-1 on Independence Hall, I think the public that bets futures and, you know, has to use this outlet, that's a recognition that Independence Hall did all the heavy lifting and two-turn debut and so forth. So Independence Hall was not, you know, the people didn't abandon ship. The horse that we talked about during the week as being, I thought, you know, a target under these scenarios, the, you know, the February 80 days out kind of a scenario. 3 Technique, 50-1. I said, I thought, you know, he had the kind of projection that you look for when you're betting futures. And 3 Technique closed at 34-1. Thought he'd be like in the mid 30s, and that's what he ended up. That was a good number. That's a good number. And then some of the higher ones, some could prove out, like Gold Street and Silver State that are running this week, etc. Yeah. And then there were a couple, you know, it's funny. I thought there were 2 prices that were surprising. Basin, of course, as well, 48-1. But Silver State, 55-1. Gold Street, 61-1. Palm Springs, with the maiden win at a mile, which should be a good jumping off point, right, for the Pletcher training. Palm Springs, 90-1. They really got ignored. And Violent City, 145-1. So you basically had the chance to get a couple of prices like you would have gotten in Vegas, essentially, in the few places actually that are running futures. It's not the way it used to be, but there's still a couple of places to get Derby futures. Back to the weekend, and I suppose a little bit more with the added 24, whatever it is, 30-something hours since we closed things out at the event center at Bally's. I got, after we got off the air, I got a copy of, and everybody can see it at the NTRA website. You can see the contest wagers that Thomas Goldsmith made. You can score along and see what kind of decisions he had made over the 3 days to get where he got. Hope to have a longer full conversation with him, as we usually do. He was like so many. I suppose of the recent interviews, pretty much everybody. Yeah, pretty much everybody. I'd have to go back and maybe listen. They are so just kind of worn out and just, you know, mentally and physically, kind of exhausted when they get to the wire after this. And there's also been, you go through that sequence of races on the final table. It will be interesting too. And Pete will be with us tomorrow. Rich Yang on Thursday, and get some of their thoughts. But, you know, there was certainly some places for players to make a move. You know, you had the $10 winner in that first leg, but then 14-1 on that big sin on the Generazio, Jimmy Ryerson. That was a place that people could have really moved. You would have had 43-80 combined. And even the place horse, that Gringotts from the rail, the Chris Engelhart, 24-1. And paid $33.40 to place. You had a 6-1, that classy, of course, in the Tampa race. I mean, there were numbers that would move people around. Not the least of which was the nightcap, the 10-1. Red Lark, 31-20. And very strange that nobody gravitated, not the after the sixth race of the final table, there was no movement. Nobody hit. And there was 31-20 to be had there. So, yeah, and the strategy discussions and so much. So, it was great, just great fun. What else do we have here? As I tried to catch up on things that happened while we were distracted. It's a couple of performances that, and a couple of news pieces that we didn't get. I probably mentioned actually on the show during the weekend if you were listening to the stream. But as for the other side of things here, I'll include Bruce Johnstone's passing. And Bruce Johnstone, if you have not heard this, 76, and had been fighting a very difficult cancer. And frankly, I think everybody knows that was around New York. I mean, he being as big and strong as he was, he successfully fought off, you know, a diagnosis that said he had very little time right from the get-go. And Johnstone had a very successful training career, and then when he stopped training, the job he got, Charlie Hayward hired him for New York as a, they created basically a horseman's liaison, and it was a masterful stroke because Bruce was a perfect candidate, and he was unflappable. So anything that was going on, like in the race day, you know, those of you that saw it out in the afternoons, you saw him managing action. Nothing threw him. He was a cool-headed, just at the wheel, making the race day go. And in the mornings, too. I mean, he was every, you know, he could be everywhere at once, and everybody respected him. Excuse me. Just a lot of people just so shaken by it and saddened. There's going to be a memorial service. I'll see if there's an update on it. And I'm sure there'll be a race so that everybody, when they come back, particularly the horsemen that are down in Florida, that they can come and pay respects to Bruce Johnstone. Let's take a break. Barbara Minchel, Richie Baltus, Pat Biancone, Johnny, John White, and more at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest, we know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $125 are on them. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K. And you'll get $125 when you wager $500 within your first 30 days. See what I mean? House money just for playing the races you were going to bet anyway. Check out ExpressBet.com for more information. And don't forget to sign up using promo code BYK. B-Y-K to get that $125 bonus. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The North American foal crop continues to decline, but not here in Pennsylvania. In 2019, our number of mares bred increased for the third year in a row, this time by 12.5%. Why? Our stallion roster continues to grow. We have the best incentives and bonuses. Plus, there's the stability of our racehorse development fund. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
In the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Are you ready, Boots? Start walking.
We're back at the races. Well, for those that were playing the contest, looking at that Tampa Bay Stake, a number of people were super clever about last year and recognizing the performance that had nearly taken Admiralty Pier to the win. And even though he hadn't run back to that effort, there were a lot of people that saw the potential in this spot. And certainly for the English Channel, gelding, who's now five, making his debut as a five-year-old, for Barbara Mitchell and the Hootie Racing Team and Bruce Lunsford. There's been a number of horses we've talked about with Barbara, between Hooties and Bruce. This is a really nice win, and I thought he got a tremendous ride, you know, late holding off Devamani. But Barbara Mitchell joins us. And Barbara, congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was a great win.
just talk a little bit of starting from last year and, knowing that, that he had run very well at Tampa. You know, he had the win, of course, as a season ender in December. But last year in this race, if not for trouble, he might have won. And that, I think, got obscured. And he's kept nothing but great company really since.
Yeah, he ran super in this race last year, and he came out of that race good, and then he had some muscle injuries that really just took a long time to heal. I mean, nothing super serious, but just couldn't get him right back to the form I wanted him in. And then, we were kind of stuck in the middle of summer to bring him back, and Woodbine didn't really offer a lot of intermediate distances. It was either you got to go a mile and a half or short, and we kind of opted for the short, which really didn't suit the horse, but, he did keep good company, and it was kind of a regroup and get back on track, and the horse has been in excellent shape since late fall, yeah, so physically he's really good, and mentally he's really good, so he's starting to turn around to the horse I thought he would.
It's got to be very gratifying. I mean, multiple stake performances that, including as a three-year-old going back to the Transylvania. I mean, it was obvious that he's had talent. What's the backstory with him going back to acquisition?
Well, he was purchased. Patty Miller purchased him at Saratoga for the sale. And, he came to me. I was lucky because I was very lucky that the Hudsons, who are Hooley Racing Stable, and Bruce Lunsford sent me the horse, and he was champion two-year-old. He's always handled the synthetic really well. And then he's had a little bit of, minor things. I mean, never serious stuff, but, he never really got back on track for a while, and he's taken a long time to kind of physically and mentally develop. I've always, thought he was a horse with a high cruising speed and could go around a ground, and I think it's finally, finally come to, come to that where I think we know he can do that, and I think that's his forte, at least, two turn, mile and a 16th onward. I think he'll get a lot more than that too.
The interesting thing too, being an English Channel, and he's out of a Kitten's Joy mare, the English Channels only, not that they can't be successful early like he was, but by all rights, a lot of them are really at their best as a mature animal.
Yeah. I mean, I think mentally I've really noticed a big change in him. He's a little bit of a tricky horse. I got to give, congrats in a way to my assistant, Chad Elder, who gallops him. He's a bit of a tricky horse to gallop. And we train him a lot out in the field here. I'm stabled at Winding Oaks in Ocala in the winter, and he really enjoys, that open field gallop and sort of away from the racetrack, keep his mind right, and he's really thrived on it, and he's mentally just really started to thrive. He's not a real tall horse, but he's really stocked up and bulked up since from even four to five. I really noticed how much he's changed, and he's very game. I think the problem when we ran him short, he just wants to be so game, it was harder to get him off those really fast fractions, and I didn't to be honest, I didn't think he had a bunch of very good rides or very good trips. I think, you know, whoever picked him in that pick four or whatever, was, you know, they looked back to a lot of that and realized, you know, there was more there. And I think, you know, my ownership realized that too.
Well, and of course, we mentioned the ownership and Hootie Racing. I think back to the juvenile filly, Barbara. And I'm forgetting her name.
Dream It Is won the Schuylerville. Yeah. Yes. That was pretty exciting.
Well, and of course, partner here is Bruce Lunsford. Bruce, of course, known and watched Bruce's success for a long time. Awfully Wild with Lansden and Robbins, and you guys together have had, you know, a lot of success. So it's kind of fun to have, you know, two of your successful owners partnered in on Admiralty.
Yeah, no, I you know, I can't tell you how much I appreciate them. I mean, I'm a really small stable. I mean, really small, and you know, it's like it's really nice to be able to have a few good horses that can compete like this. You know, it's tough nowadays, and you know, it's to have this horse, and you know, and I've had horses like Stack Deck and that for Bruce and Dream It Is. It really really keeps you going.
Well, it's nice to have. Yeah, it's nice to have a stake horse in that. You know, in that first stall, you know, talk about what your thoughts are. Plenty of opportunities, you know, before you break camp and head back to Woodbine. What pops into your mind?
You know, I'm not. You know, I have to talk to them. I'm not really 100% sure. There is that. I think it's called the Old Forester Derby Day, going a mile and eight. I mean, that's a possibility for this horse. You know. He loves Tampa. I mean, there's no question this horse loves Tampa. He won on the dirt there easy too. He can handle almost any surface, which you wouldn't really think a kitten, you know, an English Channel out of Kitten's Joy, but he's so strong right now. He can kind of get across anything. So there's a few, you know, I mean, there's even the Challenger. I mean, at Tampa to give him a race and then maybe to the Forester, but there's a lot of options, so we'll keep all our options open and you know, hope he stays good and sound and everything goes smoothly, you know. But it's a nice problem to have, right?
There's no doubt, and the mile in the eighth would be that would be his first try going nine furlongs, and then of course as the spring and summer unfold, you might be tempted to, you know, to try him the longer distances too,
I have to say, deep down, I've always felt this horse, he's got great air and he's got a good cruising speed, and I've always felt that he could cruise at a long distance. I really I've always felt that about this horse. And I have to say, I thought Sammy Camacho, I thought both races that he's won on him at Tampa, I think he's just ridden them so well, and I thought he rode him with so much confidence the other day that you know, I got to give, you know, shout out to him that he, you know, he's really, really a good rider.
Well, and that's Sammy's first graded stake win.
I realized that after the fact, and I did not know that. So I was, you know, that was thrilling, you know. I was really happy for him. But he's just such a good rider, you know. And, you know, at Tampa, I know he's based at Tampa in the winter, and, you know, there's really only the two big days of graded stakes there. And, you know, a lot of guys come from the south, and it's hard to get a good mount. And I know we were the longest shot there, but I did tell him, I said, Sammy, I'm really confident. I told his agent, I said, listen, this horse is on the right trajectory. I said, I'm really confident in this horse, and I really want you to ride him back here. And it all worked out, you know, so it's great.
It
works out, right?
No doubt. And I can tell you, you know, we were at Vegas for the National Handicapping Championship, and a lot of players really had sniffed him out in that spot, and it was also a mandatory race. So and of course, you know, the Woodbine Gamblers, Ray Arsenault, who ended up finishing third, and you know, all the players that congregate at Woodbine, I guarantee there'll be some dinners or some drinks bought for you, because quite a few of them did very well.
Well, that's good. You know, it's kind of like that hometown. They kind of throw you in there just because, just because you're from Woodbine, you know what I mean, or you're based at Woodbine. But I have to say, I was glad to see Woodbine backed up a lot. They had a ton of mile and a half stake races, and they've backed a lot of those up to a mile and a quarter. So I think that was a good move on Woodbine's part. You know, a lot of those graded stake races, I think. You know, so, but I do think it was, this horse will go a distance, and you know, we're just blessed to have him.
On this topic, let's talk about the mare as well that you've got, the stakes mare, because Get Explicit ran last weekend, I think, right?
Yeah, she's a really good filly, and she's kind of also has a little bit of tough trips. She's so susceptible to pace in a race, you know, and but I think I'm going to run her back in the Hillsboro. She's doing really well, and I think it's her turn. I think she can win a graded stake, and she's a nice filly, and she's doing really well right now. So I'm going to take her to the Hillsboro and give that a shot. I think at the mile and eighth to mile and a quarter suits her probably a little better than the mile and a half, but she can get that distance depending on the whole pace scenario. It's a tricky distance.
Well, in addition, Barbara, we should mention last year you had, if I'm not mistaken, the most starters, almost as many starters as you've ever had. You know, you describe yourself as a small barn, but you know, we seem to talk, you know, fairly regularly. It you've seemed to have and are able to coax out a stake horse or two on a regular basis from, you know, a handful of horses.
From 20 horses.
Yeah, exactly. old school.
You know? Well, you know, I just try to, you know, let most owners, you know, that I've had, I mean, they want the better horses. And, you know, once I recognize a horse is a cheaper horse, I mean, there's always a place for them, but move them on and let's look for something else, right? Just move them on and try to look for the good horse. And then once you know, recognize one, let's just try to do the best we can by them. But I've got a few kind of nice horses this year, so I'm hoping for a little bit better year, you know, and try to, you know, keep going.
I want to ask you about at least one or two that, you know, haven't even had their seasonal debuts yet. At the end of Woodbine season last year, Glorious Tribute broke through the congrats gelding for Bruce. When are we going to see him?
You know, I just might. He's doing really good. I've only brought a few horses here to Ocala, like seven, and I did bring him. I'm hoping I have maybe a Queen's Plate horse. He's really started to mature and really come around, and I really starting to turn the corner with him. I'm actually going to breeze him over on the turf here tomorrow. I just might try him in the Columbia at Tampa, going a mile. I mean, he's definitely a route horse, and I think he'll have no trouble getting a mile and a quarter, but it might be just a good place to just kind of get him a race, and then definitely he'll be aimed for the Ontario races. Up there, he'll have a lot of options being an Ontario bred. And, you know, even his conditions, I mean, he's running for quite a bit more money being an Ontario bred. So, you know, we'll just try to get that race into him and then go forward. But he's doing very well, and I was very impressed with his last race. He's kind of slow to come around. We kind of gelded him after a couple of races and mentally kind of slow to come around, like just focus. But I really noticed a huge change in him in the last, you know, 30 days, 60 days here. So yeah, so I'm really happy with him.
Excellent. Well, Glorious Tribute. So we'll watch there. And I mentioned Bruce and his partner on Awfully Wild. I know the two of them are in on Armistice Day together.
Armistice Day, yep. He's here. And not 100% sure where we're going to run him next. You know, I ran him in that condition race at Gulfstream when he came off the turf. Don't think he really wants to dirt this horse. You know, he just doesn't have that same kick. He doesn't have that same punch in a race that he shows on the turf. He just, I think, on the turf, he doesn't show it on the dirt. So he ended up sort of hanging on for third in that race. But we'll be looking for a turf spot, I think, for him and move forward. And he's just going from 3 to 4, so he's got to jump up to that older level of horses. And, you know, he's maturing a lot, too. And I've got I think he'll be able to make a big dent in a lot of those Woodbine stake races going along. I think he's a real cruising horse too that can get a good bit of ground.
He certainly is a declaration of war, and he's got an interesting breeding because he's out of the wonderful Melnick mare, Harmony Lodge,
right.
Who was just
right.
And
I'm
tough
at the Melnick farm, Winding Oaks, right now, and there's pictures of Harmony Lodge everywhere.
As a reminder, does he look like her?
Reminder, the road's called. I think the road, one of the roads inside here, is that yes. We're under a lot of pressure here.
I love it. Well, he was at $245,000, and the declaration of war's they're winning. And what an interesting, as you said, what an interesting, you know, mix, and it'd be intriguing to see, you know, as he matures and he's gelded. So you got time to.
Yeah, he's kind of a tall, lanky horse, and you can still see he's going to fill out and muscle up and mature. You know, he should be better and better as he gets older, you know, and he's a really nice horse. I got big hopes for him, and I like I said, I really think he'll get a good bit of ground, especially on the turf. He's got a good cruising speed, and he's a knock on wood, he's a nice sound horse, so keep our fingers crossed.
Well, she was, you know, she was like a classic 7/8, you know, one turn mile type of image, and there was a period where she was very tough, and I mean,
right.
I remember her winning at Saratoga, winning the Ballerina, and I saw I don't know how many, I should look her up. I don't know how many times.
Yeah,
I saw
she's
Harmony
got
Lodge.
They've got a big trophy room on the main office here, and Harmony Lodge's name's on a lot of them.
With good reason. And you know, you mentioned Winding Oaks. I mean, being up, it's interesting. Being there in Ocala, it's obviously an easy ship to Tampa. A little bit further to go down a Gulfstream, but it's not
a
hardship.
We have to go the day before. It's just that little bit too long, and it's the traffic. You know, I mean, the hour is not, but you know, it's so much traffic in South Miami. Always pretty much have to add another 2 hours to your trip down there, but to Tampa it's easy, an hour and a half. I mean the horses get to sleep in their stalls and they're generally home by 9 o'clock at night. I mean, it's great, and I find a lot of horses really like that.
Now it's a nice setting out there too, whether it's you know, Winding Oaks and the, you know, the training centers, and looking forward, actually coming down in March for OBS for the March sale mid-month.
Right.
Yeah, it's a great place to train and spend the winter. Well, Barbara, obviously Admiralty Pier with the win, and sounds like there's plenty to look forward to as the rest of the season unfolds. And frankly, Woodbine opening is not really that far off at this point.
Yeah, it's still a little cold up there for me, but I'll hang down here as long as possible.
I love it. Barbara, always great to connect. Congratulations.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate
Not at
it.
All. Barbara Minchell, everybody. And you can follow Barbara. She's on Twitter. I see some stuff from, in fact, let me see specifically to get her address so that if you want to follow. All right. Well, it's not coming up immediately. I will get it for you. I think Richie Baltus is going to beg off for today, by the way. He got sick over the weekend, and he didn't even come in today. He's home resting up. So we'll table Richie Baltus and catch up with him later in the week. All right? So let's take a break. We'll come back. Might get Arno Delacour instead. All right? Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Whether at home at the track or on the go, ExpressBet is your way to play the races. ExpressBet provides legal and secure online and mobile betting on more than 300 of the world's top tracks and all the big events. And when you sign up for an ExpressBet account today with promo code BYK, that's B-Y-K, you'll receive a $125 bonus. Once you've signed up, you can take your wagering experience to the next level with XB Rewards, ExpressBet's industry-leading loyalty program. Earn points for every bet you make and cash them in on everything from wagering credits to exclusive racetrack experiences. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for ExpressBet today using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K to get your $125 bonus. Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back. About 15 to the top of the hour, and could have actually slipped Johnny in here, and we'll tack Arno Delacour on, hopefully, with later with the visit from Patrick Biancone. But right now, let's get Johnny in here because we got a ton to talk about with Johnny, and I figure that way we can go around to the bottom of the hour. And he joins us now, XB Johnny D. Good morning.
Morning, Stevie. Welcome back from your road trip.
Thank you. First of the season, and certainly enjoyable, certainly notable between the Santa Anita swing, and that was tremendous fun, and now coming out of the Vegas, I think the fifth one we've done at NHC. I think based on the on the response that people found it as exciting as always, and the twists and turns. You've been to your share of big contests.
I don't know about my share, but I played in the NHC one time. And I thought it was great. I mean, I really, when I look back and I think about how excited I was, what a monumental task it is, what a challenge it is to be on your game, digging through races. I can't remember how many mandatories there were at that time and how many optionals there were, but it was just this massive amount of handicapping that I was trying to get done, and it just didn't ever seem like I was going to get through it all. And when people say that they're drained at the end of it, that is so absolutely true, mentally, physically, and so wonderfully drained, because it's what you, well, if you're a horse player, it's what you enjoy doing, and you get to spend several days in the company of fellow horse players, all searching for that holy grail, which, I mean, it's so elusive. But yet, you know, it's one of those things where you can't win it unless you're in it. And, you know, the glory of winning the NHC, all that goes with it, the Clips Award and all the fanfare and all the recognition. There's a check, pretty sizable check. I think it was $800,000 this year. That's all unbelievable. And as a horse player, that's what you aspire to. But the fun of competing in the event, of being there, the challenge, it is really, we don't have anything like it, really. In fact, you and I think we met at a tournament. We first met at the Orleans, I believe.
Yes.
The Horse yep. Fire World Series, yeah. And I think I was there. I was covering it for HRTV, I believe, at the time. So my point is that while the Horse Player World Series is exciting, I don't even know, I think they still call it that. It was exciting, and you still have the camaraderie, still have the players. It's not near the level of the NHC. And I think I saw this year up to 690 players. Well, of course, you know, somebody wants to say that's a crapshoot. It's not a handicapping competition. It's a crapshoot. Yes and no. I mean, it's like anything else in this game we play. This crazy, insane, maniacal game we play, you got to be lucky. There's skill involved, but it has to be your day. The best handicappers in the nation, you'll see their names on these leaderboards if you play online competitions, or if you play, you know, competitions at the track, any tournaments, where they often finish with zero. And you say, well, how could that guy, he's a great handicapper, how could he have zero? He's playing the game. You got to try. What did Herm Edwards say? You play to win the game. And it's no more true than in these tournaments. You play to win the game. And a lot of times in tournaments, you're going to end up with zero because you've got to take not just, you can't handicap the way you do on a normal basis. You've got to go a little above that. You've got to be a little better than that. You've got to come up with price horses. And it's got to be your day, just like the run that our champ this year was on Sunday, where you talked on the radio. I feel like I was there. You guys talked on the radio about him with his mandatories. What did he go in the mandatories? Did he go, I don't know, how many were there Sunday? One, like four in a row, I think, or something.
There were seven, and he hit the first three with two wins and a placement, and then in the fifth one, he hit the fifth one as well, the Oaklawn win place.
So, you know, he was obviously, and his place horses, you know, were obviously price horses, and so that adds to your total. And he just kept moving forward. And every time they came to him, he just found more on the lead and just kept drawing away again. And so congratulations to him. It's a great event. A crap shoot? Yeah, a little bit. But we're in a gambling game, so shooting craps is gambling. But it is a fantastic event. And it's so great to hear. I couldn't be there this year, but it's so great to hear the players you interviewed talking about discussing the tournament and what it means to them and the camaraderie between those horse players, and hearing someone like, you know, Roxy Roxborough, a Vegas legend, tell stories. And it's a great event. We, you know, I think about in the racing industry, because many people straddle the lines between the industry and playing the horses. Many of us are in the industry. We have day jobs in the industry, but we spend all our free time playing the races. So we never really leave racing. But some of the people in the industry who are also excellent handicappers, you hear them talk about what an experience it is. And in the industry, we only get together. I want to say Arizona is one place where industry people kind of share camaraderie and get together, maybe have a few cocktails. And then Breeders' Cup, I believe, is another kind of a gathering event. But there's, other than Arizona, there's no real, the Triple Crown races, you'll bump into people. Pegasus, you'll see some people. All the Triple Crown races, you'll see some. But there's no real industry gathering point other than Arizona. I would say would be the closest, I think. All the horsemen have their group, you know, gathering, and the NTRA. Every group has their own gathering, but there's no real. And for horse players, the NHC is that event where you can get together with so many great players and great people, you know, who share your love for handicapping. And that's, whenever you can do that, it's wonderful.
Agreed. And you sense that, especially from the players that are there for the first time. And once you get there, the need and the desire to come back. And even though there are plenty of examples of players that, including Scott Coles last year, that got there for the first time and won, it does feel like a circumstance where every time you go, you're adding a layer of experience that will benefit you down the road. And I think Ray Arsenault's performance in the final table, a good example of that. And it was funny because we took a little bit of a poll from a few people about whether Ray's experience as a winner was going to benefit or was it going to add pressure. And so there was a little bit of, there was about three different, I think we asked, Chris Littlemore said he thinks it would benefit tremendously. Somebody else said they thought it would be added pressure, but Ray, Ray just kept firing and came close. I mean, for him to finish third, and you know, I'm looking here at the plays that Goldsmith, he collected 15, 20, 22, 20, 80, and 17, 80. I mean, that's a strong in those seven plays. And granted, there were some prices. What was interesting to me, Johnny, was that when the biggest prices came, some people missed opportunities. And the fields were not, other than that New York race where we had 13, but then a horse ran off and was a gate scratch. So we ended up with 12. That was maybe the biggest opportunity, but even in that eighth race at Santa Anita, he ended up with a winner that was was going to produce $30 in mutual, and nobody used it.
Yeah, that was surprising. It definitely was surprising. It's funny because I tuned in to I listened to the replay of Sunday on Monday, so I already knew the results of the races that you guys were talking about and discussing. And I didn't know, you know, I was saying to myself, well, I guess no one had this horse. Someone must have had this horse to move up the border. That just wasn't there. No one.
Nope.
No one made a move. And I looked back at the horse after the race. My personal wagering Sunday, I didn't have the horse either. I may have been more preoccupied with the red carpet, the Oscar red carpet in my house. That's an annual event, the red carpet fashion. But looking back, you know, it's we all do it. The race is over. Horse pays $30. You start scrambling for the past performances to see what you missed, you know. And you look back and, you know, sometimes you look back and say, oh, I didn't see that. I didn't see that he's first-time Lasix. I didn't see that he's first-time gelding. I didn't see that he switched trainers. I didn't see that he had a bull at work. Whatever it is. I didn't see he had trouble last time. This one, you look back and you go, yeah, I don't really get it. So that's probably why no one had it. But even the price seekers probably jumped on it. But the other point about the positioning.
Yes.
And the purse money that you get for, for 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th through 15th or whatever. The purses go all the way down. And I haven't really heard, you know, mention of how much money. What does it break down, like way down, like 15th? What do you get?
15th would get 20,000. The top four finishers, the superfecta, is all six-figure earnings, 800,000, 250, 125, and 100. And then fifth gets 75, sixth, 65, seventh, 58, 500. Then 55,500, 52,000, and 50,000 for 10th. So if you make the final table, you're guaranteed 10,000. The other semifinalists from 11th and...
If you make the final table, you're guaranteed 50,000.
Yes.
Yes, you said 10. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, 50,000. If you're 10th,
right.
You get 50,000. And then it goes up from there. Then the from 11th to, let's say, 11th, it looks like 11th to, 11th to, say 22nd, 23rd, from it basically is a 15,000 to 25,000. 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th all get 25, 23, 22, 21, 20. And then it sort of cascades down from there from 19,000 all the way to 10,000. If you're 70th, 71st, 69th, you had those ties this year. We had the extra two players. And so NTRA kicked in an additional 20,000 there. So, you know, if you make it to the semifinals, you're not going to get less than 10,000, extra 10,000.
Yeah, not a bad weekend. Not a bad weekend. So I think it's a great event. And, you know, it's funny how the BC tournament at Breeders' Cup, I think it's a $10,000 buy-in, and that's probably what restricts the overall attendance. I don't think there's a cap on players there. It's just the $10,000 is a cap. It's a self-imposed cap. It doesn't have the same feel. It's different. Some of the same players are there. Some of the best players or are playing online or whatever, they're involved, but it's not the same. And I was trying to think of a comparison to something where there's a lot of money involved, like the BCBC, but another event has more, well, it's older, has more history, has more appeal. Not more, I shouldn't say more appeal, but you'd love to win either, but has more cachet, maybe that's the word. And I think the NHC is like, kind of like, look, the Masters, this may not be exact, but let's say the Masters as compared to the FedEx Cup race, which is, I don't know, $15, $20 million, whatever it is. It's a lot of money, and it's prestige and everything. But the Masters is the Masters. And if you ask players, probably they like the Kentucky Derby and the Breeders' Cup Classic. Maybe that's a racing comparison. Where they're both rich races, both grade one, both make you world famous. But one of them's got a little more, you know, a little more history, a little more
cachet. Right.
Yeah. Anyway, so it was a great weekend. Thank you for delivering it to us, folks who are not able to attend. And I, your whole trip, I wished I was with you. You went to Santa Anita, my favorite racetrack, saw all my favorite people, my good friends, had them on the air. We're in the press box where I spent my formative years. And then you went to Vegas, which used to be one of my my road trips. I'd go to Santa Anita, and then I'd go to meet everyone else. From the boys would fly out from Philly. I'd meet them in Vegas, and then do the championship. So I envy that trip.
I was glad that I tacked the Santa Anita portion on the front end. That was a Jay Privman suggestion. That was a good one, and it really did work. It worked out perfectly, and actually a couple of extra an extra day and a half in Vegas too to get ready, and we did a couple of shows Wednesday, Thursday in advance. I think that also helped, and it was a good weekend because other than the Tampa, and we'll transition into a review of the weekend as well as a review of the results at Beat the Host. Ron Nicoletti banging up $48 worth of return. And we also have to talk about the future wager, get some impressions from you. But there was just enough of the stake action and the great card at Tampa so that, you know, the contest, there wasn't a tremendous distraction, essentially, Johnny, like there might be this weekend and in coming weekends when we're going to, you know, start to get multiple winter stake Saturdays.
Yeah, this is it. We're in it now. In fact, I was thinking about this morning. The Tampa race has the points. It's a route of ground. It's grade three. You know, a lot of focus on it. But it turns out that the San Vicente at 7 furlongs at Santa Anita has produced at least 2 Kentucky Derby winners in the last 30 years, maybe. No points, 1 turn, 7/8, a launching point for many of the 3-year-olds. And this year it featured the return of the 2-year-old, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner, and the 2-year-old champ against Bob Baffert trained headline getting superstar and a returning nuts and bolts sprinter, a tough sprinter. So while the 2 races were were strong in their own right. It's funny how the one that had no points and was 7-8 really was the perhaps the more interesting on the day, to my mind, my thinking.
Well, certainly there's a lot to watch and anticipate out of the San Vicente. Nadal seemingly headed to the Rebel, and I had an interesting my friend Ange on Twitter said he said he didn't really sense that there was the same, you know, early season excitement around this horse based on that performance. And in fact, even at the table on Sunday, everybody was sort of, eh, they were like, okay, that was all right. I said, come on, it's his second start. And he, you know, I thought, and especially when you see what Baffert said afterward, that, you know, he will benefit from that race. I also think the same can be said of, you know, of Independence Hall. I mean, certainly he did the heavy lifting, and Sol Vellante, who ran very well and is obviously a talented horse on either surface. You know, it actually is kind of refreshing, Johnny, to see these horses and, you know, storm the court. Peter Ertin made it very clear that it was strictly a building block and just a place to return and to go forward from there. It's kind of refreshing that these horses are using preps to prep to improve their to polish their their accomplishments and to teach them things, you know, two turn experience for Independence Hall, etc. That's what February is supposed to be, January, February. You know, then the distances will ratchet up, and so will, so will the stakes. But we're not looking for Derby winning performances in February.
Yeah, and I think in Tampa Bay Derby, in the Sam Davis, I think what we saw is a couple of runners, actually the first two finishers, who'd been around two turns, like Independence. I'm sorry that have had, I didn't mean around two turns, I mean that have had January races. This wasn't their first
right
race of the season. They'd already been out. They'd already, in Independence Hallscape, you'd already won a stakes race. So this wasn't, a prep race for them, as much as you could say the San Vicente was for many, for a couple of those runners. It was actually the first step, towards moving forward. Independence Hall, to talk about the Sam Davis, Independence Hall, I did not like that race at all for him. I don't understand why he didn't win. He was sitting in a fabulous spot, I thought, behind a couple of pace setters. He was a little bit eager, well, maybe a little more eager than you'd want, but he was 12 clear of down the backside. He was 12 clear of the rest of the field, and he had two pace setters in front of him, ding-donging. I mean, I don't know. I'd like all my horses that I wager on the rest of my life to be in that position. He went to the lead easily. I think the jock assumed he had plenty of horse under him. He took a look back to see. He must have heard everyone coming, or else he wanted to see whether he should let this horse out a notch early or late. And, he opened up. He had a lead in the stretch. And was it a case of him stopping or Sol Vellante, catching him? As normally it's a case of both, a little bit of both. Which is a problem for Independence Hall to lose from there. In my mind, that disappointed me. He seemed like he was a better horse than I thought he had things go his own way. He made the lead and then nothing. The other horse, Sol Vellante, the winner, he made a really long run. I mean, he was moving. When he moved ahead of the tiring pace setters, Independence Hall had gone to lead and opened up a little bit, and Sol Vellante blew by the Tyree pace setters. At that point, I remember thinking to myself, well, he's made such a long extended run. He's not going to have any kick left. But if he didn't dig down and just, boom, explode through the lane, you know, the final, the 24-4 and then 6-1 for the last 16th is okay. That's not bad at all. So he looked very good winning that race. And it's funny how you get, I don't know, maybe this is just me. In your mind, you have biases towards or against certain races. And the Sam Davis leading is a great lead into the Tampa Bay Derby. But if you think of the Sam Davis long-term Kentucky Derby, it seems to me it's been responsible for producing more disappointing Derby runners than Derby winners. Now, again, I don't have the list in front of me of the Sam Davis winners. It's just, I'm saying it's a bias in your mind. As you analyze these races, you kind of estimate their importance in the big scheme of things. So, you know, you wonder, Sol Vellante, was that his day? You know, was that effort his hurrah? Did everything set up perfectly for him that day? He was coming into his own. He'd had race in October, November, December off, and then January. He had a couple of turf preps, which he both won. The 1 mile, one turn, Mucho Macho Man. He finished third, beaten a couple lengths. Was that Sam Davis his day? Or is there more in the tank? That's what we got to see. And those are decisions, really, that horse players try and make.
Agreed. And I'm, as you said that, I pulled up the Sam Davis, and it is interesting. The best recent winner would probably be Destin.
Destin,
right?
He was one of my picks. One of my Derby picks.
I think there you go back. Bluegrass Cat won this in 2006, which I would not have had that recollection. You know, what an interesting list this is. And of course, you know, it only recently went graded, which only enhances its appeal for trainers to use it as a stepping stone, whether they're going to run in the Tampa Bay Derby or not. But Bluegrass Cat in 06, Any Given Saturday in 07, which then, of course, set up that epic Tampa Bay Derby with Street Sense, which was just spectacular. Any Given Saturday was certainly useful, and so was Bluegrass Cat. Fierce Wind, Zito. General Quarters. How about General Quarters, for Tom McCarthy, who went on to an okay career, absolutely. Rule for Pletcher. Brethren, brother of the Derby winner, who's been exported. Battle Hardened, Keneally. Falling Sky, John Terranova. How about that? Vince Ramos. Ocean Knight for Kieran. Destin. McCracken, Flame Away, the tough nut that refused to give in too often. Well Defined last year for Kathleen O'Connell, and Sol Vellante. It's an interesting list.
It's a solid race, right? That produces, you know, solid horses who have solid careers, but it's not really, you know, a Derby producer. It's a Tampa Bay Derby producer, but not a Kentucky Derby producer, necessarily, you know. And think about it. When you think about it, its place on the schedule, I think what you get is a lot of times you get the big trainers that have, you know, four or five potential Derby hopefuls as two-year-olds, like a Backford, like a Pletcher. Like they, as they start to arrange their horses where they're going to send them, throws it, you know, you start to see the Tampa Bay Derby is one where they'll send, I don't want to say third string, but not the main guy. They'll send, like, a guy who needs to step up a little bit, or a guy who's maybe not quite done as much as you thought he's going to. You know, it's just that it's just not the – it's not as tough as going through Arkansas or going through California or even Louisiana on occasion. But Arkansas, California, and Florida have become – you know, they're the usual producers. And that's where, if you're a trainer, if you send a horse to Oaklawn, you know you're going to have Bob Baffert to deal with. You know, if that's your road you decide to take, you know Baffert's going to be sending something there, and it's going to be pretty good. If you want to go to Santa Anita to run the Santa Anita Derby, which hardly anyone ever does, you know it's going to be rough out there. If you want to go, if you're at Florida, if you're in, you know, at Gulfstream, you're going to run in that Derby. Well, if you run well, that's a good sign, because that program produces, or has produced, lots of Triple Crown finishers over the years. So when you think about all these races, it's interesting. There's bias for and bias a little less, not by, I don't want to say against. I'm not against anything. I'm not against the Sand Dance. It was a very good race. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, when we judge coming out of these races, where we want to put horses, what happens in the history of the race affects how high you want to rank the winners of those races. There, that makes more sense.
No, agreed. We'll talk about
it. I love the way Sol Vellante won. I mean, he leveled out. He looked like he was getting after it. He was definitely doing it.
Well, and he's a serious. We already know, you know, from the turf side. If and when he goes back, but for now, hard to argue.
I want to see him on synthetic. Do you think ask Patrick if he can get him on synthetic?
And round out the resume.
Yeah.
Johnny, what else? What else amongst the particularly the stakes action, and there were also plenty of maiden races, including at Tampa, that Pletcher maiden winner, Texas Swing, won going a mile and 40, hasn't gotten a lot of notoriety, but earned a square figure doing it, and I'd keep an eye on that one. You had the pair of Arno Delacour. We're going to talk to Arno when we're done with you at the bottom of the hour. Arno Delacour is going to join us, and he and Daniel Centeno, you know, pairing up with the Endeavor win and the Suncoast, not a good start to the season for Got Stormy. And, you know, that they'll have to regroup going forward. And we just talked to Barbara Mitchell.
I think Got Stormy that was very disappointing, because she almost looked like she was just not fit. It looked like she ran like she was short. And I know as a trainer, Mark Cassie is not aggressive getting horses ready for their first race back. So maybe he thought, and good horses will fool trainers. It happens a lot. Trainers don't want to be too hard on them because it's a long year. Good horses will do things easily so that they think they're more fit than they actually are, so they don't, you know, they don't push them, and turns out they weren't where you thought you had them. And sometimes that happens, and you'll see that's why they say off layoffs. If you're going to beat a good horse, if you're going to, as a horse player, if you're going to try and beat a good horse, do it off a layoff. Well, they need the race, and sometimes the trainer doesn't crank them up, and sometimes the trainer gets fooled. He thinks he's got them fit enough to beat the competition he's going to face. Turns out, He was fooled. So I think maybe that's what happened there. She's too good. She's too good for that.
We'll wait for the second outing of the season. What we should do before it gets too late, too, I want to get some reaction from you on the future wager numbers, and we'll, John White, I know, has got some thoughts too. But also, let's talk about Ron Nicoletti and the nice job he did, and I'm sure he knocked a few people out of Beat the Host for the looking for the sweep opportunity.
Yeah, we can knock out Beat the Host now since we're on it. A big week for Beat the Host, Ron Nicoletti. Winner this week, Jeffrey Coleman. 172.50 was his total. He gets a $1,000 weekly prize. Mark Vrabel was second. I think he's, well, it's the offseason, so he's not coaching now. So he's got time to play the races. Mark Vrabel, I don't know if that's the real Mark Vrabel or not. I have no idea. $150 total, $750 prize. Joseph Piazza, $150.50, $250 prize. I just think it's kind of interesting that he has the same name as coach of the Tennessee Titans, but maybe that is the coach of the Tennessee Titans. You know, he was in New England. Come to think of it, he was a player in New England,
right?
And I remember hearing about him being at the Derby, and I also remember when Belichick showed the Tis Now race to inspire the team. He showed the Tisnow Breeders' Cup when it looked like he was beaten. The second one? Yeah. And he came back and he won. And he showed it to inspire the team. And I think they went on to win the Super Bowl that year. So anyway, that's just detective work. I have no idea if it's Mark Vrabel or the Mark Vrabel or not. I'm sure we'll find out. Someone will let us know. As far as the races go, Nicoletti, $48 total. Ronnie did a good job. That's 20% of a perfect score. Perfect score, 233.50. And you know what, Steve? We talk about this every week. The winner, the weekly winner of Beat the Host, his total of 172.50 was 73% of the overall total. Now, why is that strange? It's the third time that the winner's total has been exactly 73%. It was 71% another time, and 62% and 66% on the other two occasions. So pretty amazing. I would think that's where you want to be. It just amazes me how statistics work out in this game we play. How takeout grinds you down, how the percentage of winning favors is roughly 33 to 37% year after year, meet after meet, and how this happens. Anyway, 73% again, amazing. So we've got, as far as where we are right now with Sweep the Host, we have 49 players alive. We've got 6 weeks in the books, three to go, 49 players alive. We Ron knocked out 35 players this weekend. I wondered, maybe since all those guys, a lot of the tournament players were in Vegas, I thought maybe this would be a good week for someone to sneak in. Maybe their attention was diverted. The totals now, Ruben Genevieve, 506.50. He's still in the lead. He's been in the lead since week three. Mark Vrabel now in second, 472.50. Kevin McFarland, this week's winner, he moved up to third, 457.50. So we've got 3 weeks left. If you're chasing the cumulative prize and you haven't started yet, good luck. But there are $2,000 in weekly prizes, $5 win wager on one horse in each of 10 races, go to expressbet.com and sign up for Beat the Host. Sign up is free, and $2,000 in weekly prizes. That's a pretty good, it's a pretty good run with what amounts to a $40 investment. And since they're live wager, I'm sorry, a $50 investment. And since they're live wagers, pick a couple of winners and you get your $50 back.
Exactly, exactly. And there were, I just going back to, I'm just curious again about what which races that Ron he used. He used the Sewanee. He hit the Sewanee. He hit that race with French Rose. The first at Santa Anita he hit, but I don't really recall what that was. And of course, Venetian Harbor was she was going to be tough to beat. That it's funny. That was frustrating. That was the in the stake at Santa Anita, not the the Thunder Road, which was a deep race. And I also picked Frontier Market for the charity contest, and River Boyne was my alternate. Has been a favorite horse of mine, and I haven't mentioned this race yet, but River Boyne was very good, and that was a rock solid field that he beat in the Thunder Road.
He's a cool horse.
Yeah.
He's cool. Example of how you can do okay in this race, actually virtually play for free. A good example is Ron's selections here. He had Nono's Polaris, which $17 return for a $5 investment. That's a $5 wager. Starship Jubilee, $11 return for a $5 wager. Venetian Harbor, $6.50. return for a $5 wager, and French Rose, a $13.50 return for a $5 wager. No crazy plays there, no insane winners, and that's a $48 total.
Yeah.
So you can get your money back. Now, you're not going to win, obviously. You're not going to win a weekly prize, but you're not going to get hurt either. Maybe in the other races where it's not a strong favorite, sometimes you have to hit the ball where it's pitched,
Exactly, and also there were a couple of races, including that early race, the first race that he used, the Gulfstream Fifth, and I want to go to that race for a second because I got a handful of races that caught my eye as we were, watching the action at Vegas, and. There it is, Golden Tappet. That was the Brendan Walsh. And the minute they crossed the wire, I got a text from Mike Welch. And Mike said, boy, that was a big push. That horse had a huge write-up in the Clocker Report. And he said, I'm curious if anybody hit. Well, that was an impressive winner. And mile and an eighth on the grass. And you think, well, typically that's... that's slow horses at this time of year. But that race came back fast, 89 buyer. And that horse of Brendan Walsh's, keep an eye on that one. And the other maiden race from Saturday that looked okay was the mile and an eighth that Spot City won for Kieran. Got a 91 buyer, the Street Sense Colt. So a couple of very good maiden races, and also not that it was in the contest, but at Tampa, you had Texas Swing of Pletcher's with Johnny the Curlin, and that looked like a maiden race that could be productive going forward. So there were some 3-year-olds that graduated Saturday. To keep an eye on. And Johnny, one other race that I do not want to miss, and I'm going to reiterate from the weekend. I mentioned it at the time. There are quite a few things from the NHC broadcast that I'm going to have to reiterate. The horse that Steve Asmussen, the first North America start, that La Renolada, that won by 10 lengths at Oaklawn. That may be a very serious race mare. I think she's a five-year-old, and that looks like a really nice horse.
See, that's the other thing about being in Vegas. There are races that you don't see, but somebody else just saw, and they come over and they tell you, hey, did you see that race? You got to watch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So now you're telling me, I didn't watch that race. I didn't happen to. There's so many things going on this weekend. It was fabulous. It was wonderful. The National Pick Five, there's just stuff is going on all over the place. It was great. But I didn't see that race at Oklahoma City, so you missed something.
Yeah, pull that up.
That's the value of listening. You educate me every week, Steve, so that's why I listen to your show.
I appreciate it. The you mentioned the National Pick Five, which paid very well, 22,000 and change. And then also on Sunday, there was the first of the auto force outs of the Empire Six that paid 89,000.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. I mean, I looked at it, and what do you say? High crossing? It was high crossing. Yeah. But you have to play.
You got to look at the very least, and I was amazed how they bet a ton, they bet a ton into it. I know some people made the suggestion that, you know, that these are not going to be, you know, as lucrative, etc. But they sure seem to bet into it. I think they bet $2 million into it.
You know, chasing that. Rainbow Six at Gulfstream Sunday, they get paid $220. But they are, but look, it's what you like. You know, I know you're not a fan of the Rainbow Six and how it operates and everything, but as a little horse player, I like it. So I play. I realize the takeout. I realize all those things, but I like it. You know, the NAC, people want to squawk about the takeout and the this and the that. You know what? I like it. I enjoy it. It's a gathering. So I'm not the smartest guy around. I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, as they say. No, but I'm doing this because I like it. What do I enjoy doing? This.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, well put. You know, I got it.
I don't have to play any of it. I didn't have to play any of it. I cannot play any of it. It's up to me. But it's fun, so I play it. So I do it.
Yeah, and if you make some choices and they run for you,
yeah,
you get rewarded.
You can get a pick six for $200 if you're a really good handicapper.
Oh my God, too funny, Johnny. I appreciate it. Going to bring in Arno Delacour and talk about his two stake wins with a pair of terrific owners, Bev Anderson.
Guy does a good job.
Yes, he does. And
you know, if anyone, we didn't get to it, but if anyone wants my thoughts on the future wager pool,
yeah,
it was written before the pool closed, but you can go to expressbet.com and find my on track column from last week. My on track blog from last week, all about the Derby Future Wager Pool 2. I suggested an Odor, Basin, Silver State, and somebody else, I forget.
No Three Technique?
Oh, Thousand Words.
Thousand
no Three Technique. No Three Technique. What did I say about Three Technique? I don't remember. Lots of experience. Lots of experience.
All right.
I don't remember what I said about Three Technique. You, I know that's the one you like.
I don't know how much I like him as much as I thought that he was going to represent the kind of value that you want in a future wager.
And that's really the question,
right?
You know, we're not trying to absolutely pick the Derby winner at this point. What did I say about him? He's a trier. but I think he's just maybe a slice below. That's all. Nothing serious. 50-1 is a big number.
Ended up at the 34, which is okay. Yeah. Johnny?
There you have it.
I appreciate it, and
I know.
That's plenty. We'll see what you know next week.
Okay.
Johnny, thanks, buddy. Johnny D, everybody. XP Johnny D. Let's take a break. 90 minutes to come, and Arno Delacour and Patrick Biancone are going to join us next. So bone up on your French in the next 3 minutes.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRFSports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Vous avez lu l'histoire de Jesse James? Comment il vécu? Comment il est mort? Ça vous a plu, hein? Vous en demandez encore? Eh bien, écoutez l'histoire. Alors voilà, Clyde a une petite amie. Elle est belle et son prénom c'est
Bonnie.
À eux deux, ils forment le gang Barrow. Leur nom
Bonnie Parker
et Clyde Barrow.
Bonnie and Clyde. Bonnie and Clyde.
We're back at the races, a little past the bottom of the hour, and with Arno Delacour and Patrick Biancone joining us, we had to break out the Serge Gainsborough and Brigitte Bardot with some Bonnie and Clyde.